Now, I know deer season is right here on top of us, but guys, I'm telling you, turkey season isn't too far away. Before you know it, turkey season is going to be right here on top of us, and you're going to be scrounging, looking for stuff. Hey, you ain't got to look far. Go to Instagram, go to Facebook, Bloodline Custom Calls. That's where you want to go. Those guys have some of the best slate calls you're going to hear for hunting turkeys. I'm telling you, hands down, good stuff. And you know what else they've got right now that you can use? Some good merchandise. Man, two of the coolest looking camouflage hats that I've ever seen. And then they've got a new hoodie coming out that, hey guys, wink, wink, nod, nod, I'd like to get one. Oh my goodness, those new hoodies they've got are, they're good looking, okay? Just going to say that. Bloodline Custom Calls. Go check them out. Instagram, Facebook. I'm telling you, man, when it comes down to slate calls, these are some of the best sounding calls I've heard. Bloodline Custom Calls right here. Ruston, Louisiana, North Louisiana company. You know, we got to support local. Give them a shot. You won't be disappointed, I promise you. So you guys know I've been using WiseEye trail cameras this year. And I got to tell you, it is extremely hard to beat the picture clarity on this camera. Not only the picture clarity, it's the confidence in knowing that the cell coverage is actually going to send you the pictures. It just takes all the frustration that comes with cell cameras totally away. I know for a fact if something walks in front of this WiseEye, I'm going to get a picture. So check them out, WiseEye trail cameras. Of course, you've got the graphs that come along with it. You've got the charts, the weather, the lunar phase, all that good stuff. Man, I'm telling you, it's loaded up. You're going to look at the price, you're going to be like, but hey, trust me, you're going to get the best camera that there is on the market. Trust me when I tell you this. WiseEye Technologies has put one together. Check them out, WiseEye Technologies. You want to put your hands on one, go down to K&M Coffee, Corks and Camo in Farmerville. And also, if you want to just get it online, check them out on Amazon. WiseEye Trail Cameras. Trust me, it's the way to go. Boy, I got a good one for you tonight. I'm proud of this one. I'm really glad to get with Terry Alves of Downsville, Louisiana. Terry killed a really, really great Union Parish Piney Woods buck, 147 and 6/8, as a typical 10 with one little extra point to make it an 11 point. Now, you probably say, you know, we was all raised up on, well, if I could hang a ring on it. No, we ain't going to say if you can hang a ring on it. To be a scoreable point, it's got to be 1 inch. Now, it's your old deer. You can call it what you want to, but when I score it, I'm going to say it had 11 scoreable points for a total score of 147 and 6/8. Terry's deer's got all kind of stuff, man. It's got a great spread, like over 18 inches, like 18 and 3/8 inches. Main beams in excess of 23 inches. Long tines, I think the longest time was almost 12 inches, if not 12. So, I mean, it was really a nice, nice deer. Killed it with a crossbow, Union Parish, Louisiana, early season. Let's give a listen, Terry Alves. Here we go. The Union Parish Buck Contest is in full effect, man. And we had a deer come in the first night. The second night. I had just scored a nice 130-something inch deer from Northside Parish. And I saw this gentleman walk in with a rack, first off, I saw how wide it was. And then I saw the length of the tines, and the first thing went through my head was, okay, that's out-of-state deer. And I had it, Mr. Terry, I had it the whole time in my head before I ever talked to you that this was an out-of-state deer. Come to find out, it's from right here in the parish, man. Terry Alves, man, that is a great animal you put on the ground the other day.
Thank you.
So, you know, give us some background on you. You know, tell us where you from, what you do for a living, and then give us some background on your hunting. You know, how'd you grow up hunting around here?
Okay. I was actually born in Marshall, Texas, and we moved here when I was 7. And I have 7 brothers and sisters. So, I mean, I started hunting young, you know, early teenager. My dad, he'd take me some, and then early age, I started hunting on my own, you know. But, and we lived down in the Point area. Okay. And you know, back then all the land was open pretty much, you know, company land.
What year is this going to be around?
It's going to be around 1970.
Okay.
You know, in the early late 60s probably. But yeah, and you could pretty much hunt anywhere you wanted to, but there weren't a whole lot of deer back then. Not like it is now. And you know, you kill one every once in a while, a doe or something. Just generally hunting, because you know, a lot back then, a lot of the deer you ate.
Right.
You know, you hunted them. And, you know, but
well, if you've got seven brothers and sisters, I'm sure that was really part of you going out in the woods was to get something to eat, huh?
Oh, sure. I mean, it was, that's what it was basically all about. I mean, it was no trophy hunting. It was just like on doe day, you try to get you a doe and, you know, you only had like 2 weekends of doe day back then, but, and stuff like that. And if you did kill a buck or, you know, a 4-point or something like that, it was great. Mm-hmm. I mean, but it has changed so much, and, you know, and I have too.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask you, you know, you gave the time frame, and you said there wasn't a whole lot of trophy hunting that was done. You know, some of the bigger deer that was killed, that's ever been killed in the parish, were done in the late 60s. Did word of those deer travel around, you know, kind of like what it is now, or did it just not really?
No. If you heard about it, you heard about it from someone you knew.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's no social media and not a whole lot of television.
Right.
But the way I understood it, those big deer that were killed back then were, a lot of them were brought in here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've heard of a Missouri blue buck or something like that.
Yeah, the Wisconsin, they always called them the Wisconsin blues. There's a, you know, there's one group that'll say that the Wisconsin deer didn't make it very long because they weren't used to this habitat around here, and the heat kind of took them out. And then there's another group that said, no, I'm telling you, that was the Wisconsin deer. So there's a little bit of you know, you get some conflicting stories in there. But, hey, either way it goes, those deer that Mr. Pruce and Mr. Cranford and Mr. Dendy Hill back in those days, I'm telling you, man, I don't know if you've ever seen them. My word, they are some big, big. And then Jerry Antley down there where y'all are, he's got a good one on the wall. So.
Yeah, he's my neighbor.
Okay.
He lives about a mile and a half up the road from me.
So, you know, back in those days, was it primarily dog hunt, steel hunt? How did y'all do it?
It was both. Yeah, my younger days, you know, I just get out in the woods and hope the dogs come by me. But as I got older and a teenager and had a truck, I mean, that was the deal. We couldn't wait till dog season opened. But it's a lot more populated now. They still do some dog hunting around in this area in the Francis Creek Hunting Club, but I'm not in it anymore. I used to be, but that was the thing. You just burn a lot of gas and not hardly shoot anything.
You're right. And it was a community effort, man. I don't know if
sure.
That's something
sure.
that I don't think that the younger generation will fully understand is it was. Your little communities would get together, and they knew what track to run, and they knew who ran dogs where, not going there,
yeah.
We're going to go here, and it was just
sure.
a good time.
Oh, yeah, and every crossing had a name.
Absolutely.
I mean, you'd get out there, and CB radios, that was, you know, you just had a good time talking.
Yeah, and heaven forbid somebody gets stuck, because then everybody gets in on it, and it was just
a
good time.
Two-wheel drive trucks
with the mud grips on the back. That's what everybody rode with.
Yeah, everybody knew where everybody was at, and if you needed something, all you get on the radio.
That's it. You know, and I don't know about y'all, but, you know, it seemed like everybody pretty much, you said all the crossings had a name. Well, not only that, but everybody had their favorite one. So you knew old so-and-so was going to go to the such-and-such crossing.
Oh, sure.
You don't even think about going over there, so.
And you knew the best one.
That's right. You sure did.
You just had to get there first.
So, you know, would you classify yourself as somebody that likes to kill mature deer, or do you just happen to take this good deer?
Now?
Yes, sir.
I won't even hardly shoot a deer unless it's, you know, around, you know, in the parish, a 15, 16 wide buck is a good buck.
Mm-hmm.
and a you know, mature one. But that's, as the older I got, I mean, I used to climb trees 25 feet high and hunt. I mean, I was serious. But now I hunt out of ground blinds, and not because I can't climb. I can still climb. I just figured it out. It's a lot safer and just as good.
It is.
Hunting on the ground.
And I tell you, you know, I like to saddle hunt. I'm not going to lie to you. I like to get in a tree and do this saddle hunting. I find it very fun. But, you know, when you can get on the ground and you're eye level with these animals, you can hear them.
Oh, sure.
I mean, they sound like they're just right outside the blind of you. And it increases that intensity level just a little bit for me.
Yeah. When I bow hunt, my corn is 25 yards from my blind. And, you know, I hadn't been able to hear real well for years, high frequency hearing loss. So I've got hearing devices now. And when you sit there and watch deer and you hear them crunching that corn.
When you hear it
popping. It's just like being at a movie to me.
Yeah. We had the youth season, and I told my daughter, I was like, look, I've got a ground blind set up. It's close. I said, baby girl, these deer are going to be closer to you than you've ever heard. You'll hear the corn when they're hitting it. I said, you'll hear it popping in their mouth.
That's right.
You know, I mean, and it wasn't enough for her to want to go.
Yeah.
You know, little girls sometimes, so mine anyway, I can't.
Yeah.
They can't ever tell. Girlified. They don't want to go.
Right. And she may grow into it. Who knows?
Yeah. I'm one of them. I'm not going to push it on her, you know?
Sure. So, there's boys the same way.
Absolutely right. That's right. Everybody's, what they say, different strokes for different folks. And
exactly.
You know, I'm not going to tell somebody how to do it. And if they're teenagers now and.
Sure. And they're busy, busy, busy.
Oh,
but,
my goodness. Yes.
I mean, I know the kids that didn't start hunting until they were 15, 16, and they're avid hunters too, and never wanted to hunt when they're little. And some little ones that wants to hunt from the time they can, you know.
Yeah.
Just different.
You know, it's funny, you just said that. I remember being a little bitty, and I was so little. Daddy wouldn't let me handle a gun. I mean, I was probably 5, 6 years old. But I took a BB gun with me when we would dog hunt. And I would sit there and I had my BB gun and I had books because, you know, we didn't have any social media. I wasn't on my phone. I would sit there and I'd read books, you know, the whole time that they'd be dog, you know, the old men would be out there talking and I didn't want to get out there and talk with them old men. So I'd read books. And
yeah,
that's right. I remember when I got big enough to tote a gun, I didn't ever shoot, you know, but I thought I was somebody. You know, I was big enough to carry 410. Boy, I was somebody. You couldn't tell me nothing.
That's right.
But it was some good, good times. Boy,
it sure was.
So, you know, when did you, at what point did you decide, okay, I'm not just going to shoot any deer now. I'm going to start focusing on some mature deer.
Well, you know, the longer you hunt, the more you realize that, you know, like this day and time, I usually kill one doe and have it processed. And that, you know, it's just me and my wife, and that'll feed us. Most of the time we don't eat all that, but I always give, you know, my family, most of my family doesn't hunt, hardly any of them. And, they love deer meat though. And, I'll just give it to them and then I'll kill, but that's the way I do it. But, I just got to where it just went from hunting to I love to watch them. But if the big one comes out, that's the one I'm going to shoot.
I like how you said earlier, you talked about the spread. You know, you talked about that inside spread being 15, 16 inches.
Mm-hmm.
Before there was ever a score that we knew of, that's how you knew if it was a big buck. You know, somebody would say, oh, so-and-so killed a buck. Well, how wide was it?
That's right.
If it was 15 or over, boy, that was a good deer.
Oh, now, yeah. If it got 17 inches, oh, Lordy.
I'm telling you. And yours that you killed the other day, what was it, 18 and 4/8?
I think it was 3/8, you said.
Yeah, 3/8, something like a little over 18 inches. That's, I'm telling you, that when you came in with that deer and I saw, like I said before, the width, the tine length, and it had a little velvet on that left-hand side, I believe. I mean, that's just...
It did.
That was really, really an impressive deer that You know, I never thought I would see the second weekend of the Louisiana deer season, to be honest with you.
I was really surprised, but I had a lot of photo, camera pictures of him. And, you know, I've been feeding for over 2.5 months, and I had him in full velvet, you know, all the way through to where he had velvet hanging off his horns. And I had some pictures of him that I thought he was completely out of velvet, but you just couldn't. And I went back and looked, and you just couldn't see it. But he had a little bit, you know, on that one side. And, but there's an 8-point over there that's coming in. He's real tall. He's not near about impressive with that one, but he's still in full velvet.
You know,
and
it's weird.
I have pictures of him
last night. Full velvet.
Full velvet.
I saw one Louisiana deer hunters that was killed the other day. Big 10-point. I'm talking about probably pushing 20 inches wide or better. Full velvet. I've seen fawns this year that are still carrying spots right now. And I thought I was the only one. And I made a post on Facebook and somebody else kicked back some pictures. And I'm like, nope, look, I've got them too. It's a guy right here behind me where I live. I wonder if there's it's going to be interesting to see if this is a continuing trend of longer holding velvet and fawns with carrying their spots longer, because I've seen them carry a couple carry spots this deep. I've never seen, and I'm beyond, I never say never, but I'm telling you, I don't remember ever seeing deer carrying velvet this time of the year.
Me either. And just talking about spots, 1 week ago today, a little fawn run across the road from me, and I'm talking about small, full of spots. Hmm. I'm talking about small, not like in the first of both seasons. You know, most of your fawns, you know, over the years may see a few light spots on his behind, you know.
That's right.
And but now, I mean, I don't know if the breeding cycle is just not all at once.
Or if we
know it's not.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Or if we just had an unusual season where we had some does come in late, maybe some yearling does that caught their first cycle late in the winter, early spring. Maybe I don't
sure,
know.
And there's always a secondary rut, but it's usually within, you know, a couple week period.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. This was, I'm telling you, for fawns to have, and like you said before, with the spots on their hips, man, these deer I'm looking at got spots on their rib cage,
sure.
Some of them on their front shoulders. And I'm like, my goodness,
sure.
Gracious,
the one I saw the other day was a young fawn, and it was solid spots. And I said, man, it's, you know, usually they're by now the second. Third week of bow season, they're supposed to be gone.
Oh, absolutely. All right, and if you see one with spots, you really got to look hard. You better be carrying you some shoe polish with you just in case.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. But, you know, I asked this question. I hunted Kensaw a little bit. You know, every once in a while I'll go over there and hunt that refuge. And, you know, that rut over there is January the 1st.
Right, that's right.
January 1. What are we're only like 70 miles.
Mm-hmm.
The same temperature, and I finally asked, you know, some biologists over there, I asked them, and I couldn't figure out why. You know, the rut was a good month apart, but he told me it was the water.
That's right.
Yeah, and I never knew that. I couldn't figure it, so I asked him, and he said the water stays so high, those does have cycled themselves to where they have them, I guess, in the least danger.
That's right. When the flood waters
is the way he put it.
When the flood waters can go down, they're going to start dropping. That way, you know, when the flood waters come up, a little baby fawn's not going to be able to keep up with the mama. The way I take it, swimming and whatnot like that. So,
right.
Genetically, they have cycled out that early breed, and that's where it comes. And then the guys over on the southwest side of the state, you know, their rut is right about now. You know, they're really starting to come in. So there's really three ruts going to be happening in Louisiana. You got that one early, you know, late October. Then you've got ours going to be around November, Thanksgiving. And then you drop down around that River Delta area that's going to have some going into, like you said, late around Christmas or New Year's.
Right.
Yeah. You doing
any good? You know, I never see a good rut anyway here, but you'll catch one chasing one every once in a while. But
yeah, and you know, it's funny you say that. Sometimes if you do catch it, it's a day or two. I mean, it's not like a week long.
Oh, thing. Yeah.
It's like yeah. One day you've got three or four bucks running around. You're like, what in the world? And that's it.
And but that's you're right there.
Over with, because you won't have anything coming during the daylight to anywhere. They're straight, almost nocturnal after that.
Well, that's the good thing about these cameras. You know, you can look at some of your photographs and you can tell. Because, you know, right now, it's still the mature bucks are running together.
Yep, you're right.
But and when you see them start in the camera starting to, you know, one at a time, and then you see a doe and a buck, and you can kind of get ready to get a little more serious. But
I tell you, I call this time of the year when we start getting into the primitive weapons season, I call it kill your neighbor's deer season. Because if you've got him on camera, and you haven't gotten him by now, go on, call your neighbor and congratulate him on the deer, because he's probably going to be the one to kill him. Because the deer
that's right,
start moving around right about this time of the year.
Exactly. That's why I hunt so hard in bow season, because, you know, the deer, they're not spooky.
Right.
They're not used to anybody being in the woods. And the three biggest bucks I've killed, including that one, I've killed with a bow. But if you're going to catch that dude out in the daylight, he's not going to, he hadn't, you know, heard the four wheelers or, and believe me, they know what a four wheeler is too.
I agree with that.
Because I've watched them and hear a four wheeler come down, trucks, cars go down the road and nothing. And then a four wheeler, and boy, they go.
Right.
I've seen that too many times.
You know, I like fitness and I like staying in shape and stuff. And I've gotten to where I will park my truck about as far away as I, you know, feasibly can and make about a half mile walk to my spot just for that particular reason right there. I don't want to hear, I don't want them to hear me shutting doors, my dinging on my door when I got my keys left in. I don't want any of that, you know, and I try to walk a little bit as much as I can. Cause like you said, you know, they know certain sounds and the more, the farther along deer season goes, the more
tougher accustomed
they
gets.
Get. That's right. It gets hard for sure. For sure. So let's talk about this deer you shot the other day. So tell me the story on this big rascal, man. I can't wait to hear it.
Well, you know, before season, I had a few pictures of him coming out in the evening, but you know, it got cool here a while back, and I had a couple of pictures of him coming out, and that evening, there was a cold front coming in that night, but it was still warm, you know. It was Friday on the 7th. And I said, well, I'm going to go, you know, because you can't ever tell. Deer like to move before front. So I went, I got my ground blind. And as soon as I got in there, I mean, there was like three rabbits come out and they started eating my grass. And I said, well, the rabbits and the squirrels in my feeder. And I said, well, the little ones are moving, so. And about, I'm at 6:15, a couple of does came out. And I said, well, y'all, so I'm just sitting there. And then a couple more does came out. And then I saw a couple of deer coming through some bushy parts. I said, well, there comes some more does. But it was a couple of little bucks. I think it was a 4-point and a 5-point. And they came out. And I'm talking about this is 25 yards from me. And they're all right there. And then a spike comes out, and he was as big as they were, but, you know, there was a 4-point and 5-point, and he was running around there messing with them, and they were putting their heads together, not fighting, you know how they do. And I was just having a good time watching them, and I'm sitting there not even ready, and all of a sudden they all threw their heads up. And I said, what are they looking at? They was looking back toward my sister's house, which, you know, was 500-600 yards. And I said, what are they looking that way for? And that, all of a sudden, he just walked out. And I said, oh, my God, that's him.
I bet you did. How far was he?
He came out. When he first came out, he's probably about 40 yards.
Okay.
And he stopped, and then he started walking, and he made like a half circle all the way around those deer. And man, they just like watched him like, but he never made a move. When he came all the way around them and got about 25 yards and put his head down and went to eat. And I was still not quite ready. And I got a shooting stick in my ground blinds, and I had got my crossbow and my shooting stick. And I still had turned my sight on, you know, it makes a little click. And I said, oh Lord, but it clicked and he never moved. I said, okay. Well, when I got ready, he raised his head up and he was quartering to me, and I just couldn't help it. I shot, and, when those deer, it was real dry, and you know, when those deer, oh, when it hit him, you could hear that arrow hit him, and they tore out, and it was so dust, it was just dust flying everywhere. And I kept my eye on him, and he had to run about 25, 30 yards to get out of that opening. And I watched right where he went in. And then I just got a sick feeling. Why did you shoot that deer quartering like that?
That's a tough shot. It's a tough shot.
Oh, I mean, I just said, why did you do that? So I just sat there. And my youngest son had called me before, but I didn't answer because I had deer on me. But he called me back and asked me, and I told him, I'd shot it. And I said, man, I know better. I've done this before. Got to tracking them and jump them up. And so I'm just gonna make myself wait, you know. And the rule of thumb for me is everybody says 45 minutes, you know, to an hour. So I said, well, shoot. And it's like I told Glenn Harris, I said, I'm not gonna lie, you know, I play Candy Crush.
You had to do something to occupy your mind, didn't you?
I'm not gonna lie, I play sometimes when I'm hunting.
Well, I think we all do something, Facebook, something. We're doing something.
Right. I got my iPad out, and I set my phone right there, and I thought it's 6:40. I said, I'm going to wait 45 minutes or an hour. So I start playing. I'm sitting there, and I keep watching that phone.
Be honest with me. Was that the longest hour of your life?
Oh, Lordy. And the longer I sat there, the sicker I got. Because, you know, when you shoot one quarter and two, you have what, about 4 inches this way and 4 inches that way.
Yeah, it's left or the right. Much margin for error at all.
No, and if you hit, you know, the way he was facing me, a little bit to the right would have been a shoulder shot, and a little bit to the left would have been, you know, in a gut shot. And I just sitting there thinking, what in the world? You know, it's no telling. I just shot the biggest buck I've ever shot at, and I shot him wrong. So anyway, it got to 45 minutes. I said, well, I can't handle it no more. 45 minutes long enough. So I got out, and you know, it was dark by then. And I got my light, and I was shining up where he was standing, nothing. And I went about 10, 15 feet, and I found one drop of blood. I said, oh my God, this is no good. So I walked a little bit farther, and I found just a couple of drops. I said, well, I'm just going to go over there where he went in that thicket. And when I went over there, it looked like he had tore a lane down through there, because it, you know, it's a briar patch kind of, and I could see where he went, and it was blood, you know, a little bit of blood here, a little bit of blood there, but I wasn't finding a whole lot. And I know I've tracked too many, and you want to find a lot of blood when you start tracking,
right?
When you start finding blood, and I didn't. But
and that's the problem, you know. That's one of the downsides to that shot. Is you're not, if the arrow doesn't, if you don't get a complete pass through, you're not going to get a lot of blood. You know, it's a hard, you know, it's sometimes it's the only shot you've got, you know.
Sure. Oh, I mean, he probably would have turned, but I just didn't. I just couldn't wait.
You know, I'm not going to lie to you. I don't know if I could have waited either. You know, if you were confident enough in that shot, you knew you could make it. I mean,
Twenty-five yards.
What kind of crossbow? You got a crossbow, right?
It's a Raven. Yes, Raven, and it's bad.
It's
bad.
Oh yeah, that mole man's got one, and that dude. But, oh my God, they hit hard.
But it's so fast. I mean, you forget seeing where you hit.
Uh huh. That's right.
But yeah, I started finding a little more blood, but I could see the way the deer went easily, you know, broke, you know, sticks and stuff. The longer I looked, the worse I felt. I said, oh my gosh, this is not going to be good. So I went probably 100 yards and I could see something, but I couldn't tell what it was. And it was a lot of, you know, bushes and stuff. So I got over there and I got over where I could see. And I said, oh my gosh, there he is. But that's where all the blood was.
Where he was. Yeah, I've seen that happen before.
It looked like he poured a 5-gallon bucket out. But it looked like when he fell, he might have, you know, been spun around.
Stumbling around and all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I just sat down and I just sat there and shined my light on him. I said, oh my gosh, you lucky rascal. But, you know, 100 yards, and I even called a friend of mine and, you know, told him, and he told me, he said, if you need me, I'll come and help you. I said, I know that. I said, but I'm gonna try. I got about 100 yards to drag this deer. But, you know, when you grab a hold of a deer with one side and you go to jerk on him, he don't move.
Yeah.
He's big.
He's a good size. Yeah. He's a good size animal for this area, for sure.
But, I just sat there a little while, you know, I just couldn't believe that I found him that quick, not finding any blood. But I called my buddy and I said, well, if I need you, I'm going to call you. But I sat there and I finally I went out and I grabbed him by both horns and I just dragged him about 10 steps. But see, I'm 66 years old, but I'm not 66. I'm going to tell you. You know, everybody knows me, but, you know, I help a lot of people, but I hate to ask for help. And I had a grandfather, he was a little bitty man, and he was in his upper 70s, and I used to get on him all the time about not asking for help. And now I'm doing the same thing.
Right. I mean, when Mr. Glenn told me that you had handled this deer by yourself in the situation, what you did, and of course, you know, I knew around about, you know, about your age range. I didn't know you were 66, but I had you in your 60s. You know, first thing I thought was like, man, why didn't somebody come help this guy? You know, but first thing is, I got to ask for help, be honest with you.
Exactly. I had all the help I wanted if I asked for, but if I couldn't have done it, I'd have called.
Right, right.
But I dragged him while I just sat down because by then I was just content because I found him.
Right.
And I dragged him a little ways and I just sat down. And I dragged him, and finally I got him in the opening. But I did have a lift made. It had a little winch on it, and you put it in your receiver hitch.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't know. I got the truck I was hunting in. The one I usually hunt in is the one I stay in. Well, I've got a second truck that I hunt in, a Tacoma, that I bought, and I don't use it that much, so I threw that thing in the back, but I didn't look at the receiver hitch, and the guy I bought the truck from had it bolted in to keep it from rattling, mm-hmm. and I didn't know it. So that did away with that deal.
Yeah.
But I had, like I told Glenn, I said, I had a piece of 1-inch, just say plywood, it was OSB, in the back of that truck that was about 3x4. And I said, well, maybe if I can, I slid that out and left it right on the edge of the tailgate. And I said, I don't know if there's no way I'd drag this deer. But I don't know if it was what it was, drilling or what. But I grabbed that deer by the horn and I put my hand on a turnbuckle up on the side of the bed. And I pulled that dude up in there. And I said, well, I'll be doggone. Well, I got him, so.
Well, I tell you, that's how long you think it took for you to recover to get him drug out of there? How long you think that was?
I say 30 minutes to drag him 100 yards.
That's so you said he was, you know, we know at this point we can tell it's a big animal. Did you weigh him?
Mm-hmm. I didn't actually weigh him, but, you know, I've got a buddy of mine that raised deer, and he kind of aged him. He said he's like five and a half year old. You know, he said he's big. You know, he's big.
Yeah.
But he was heavy. I've drug too many of them, and he, I told him then, I said he was 200 or a little better. I know he was.
Yeah, at that size, you would almost believe, you know, he's not been through the rut. He's had the summer to get a little, you know, size. Obviously, he's probably, I wouldn't be surprised at all if that deer was hitting 200, a little over 200 pounds, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
He was heavy, and he was big body, wide body.
Has anybody else come forward and said, hey, I've been hunting that deer for a while? Anybody said anything like that? Or is it
well, as a matter of fact, I talked to some guys today that are probably not even a quarter of a mile from there, and one of them's son killed a really nice buck last year, and he said, they killed that one right across the road. And he said, and him and his brother, you know, they're both, you know, grown, and both on the center told me, said, we neither one of us have a picture of that deer. So we've done looked through all our pictures and we don't have one. I said, well, the way I understood it, I went back the next day. I'll tell you this much. I went back the next day and found my arrow. And I went over there where that deer came from, and I went in there and I found a bed in there. And it was just wore down. And I got over there and I squatted in and I looked at that bed, and from that bed you could see that whole area, that opening where I was feeding. And that's right where that deer came from. And I said, this deer's been watching me. Because I drive up there, you know, throw the corn out. But, you know, I've heard a lot of stories about the big bucks laying up in people's yards. Mm-hmm. And you have too. Well, I guess he was one of them. And these guys had cameras out for a while. And they said, we do not have a picture of that deer.
It's funny you bring up the buck bed. I'm listening to a podcast, or I finished up a podcast today with Southern Outdoorsman. They were talking about hunting a buck in his bedding area, and you know, the guy they were talking to was like saying the same thing. He said a buck is going to bed where he can see everything that goes on. Doesn't surprise me a bit in the world what you just said about this deer was bedded up where he could see exactly what's going on in his area. But why would, you know, if he could see that, you know, he still came out. I mean, obviously you think he knew that you were there, or did he, I mean, obviously
no, the way I come in, I've got me another way in. I've got a trail.
I got you.
Coming in to my ground blind, and it's on the other end of that opening. And I come around that way.
I got
coming
you.
Coming in. But I think he came out because those little old bucks were out there
competition
cutting up like they were.
That's what it was, competition.
That's what I think.
Very well could have been.
But he couldn't see. That's one thing I did when I put my ground blind. I put it on the other end of that opening, and I had there was a partial road coming around through the woods that way, and I cut me a trail in. And actually rake the leaves back where, you know, I could be quiet coming to my ground blind. Mm-hmm. And, but there's no way he could have seen me coming to my ground blind. But when I come in to feed, the road runs right in front of that spot. And he's sitting there, and I just about know it because that bed's been well used.
Right, right.
And I know he watched me put corn out.
Yeah, isn't that the craziest thing?
I sure didn't know he was laying right there.
Right there, right at you, the whole time. So you shoot a raven. What kind of broadhead you shoot?
I shoot a rage, 2-inch rage. They make one for a crossbow.
They sure do. They sure do.
Yeah, and that's what I shoot.
How long you been shooting that broadhead?
I've been shooting the broadhead probably at least 5 or 6 years. I shot a Spitfire before that.
I've shot the Spitfire before. I like the Spitfire myself.
Yeah, I killed a 6x6 elk with a Spitfire in Colorado.
Uh-huh.
And it did a good job.
Yeah.
But when I bought the crossbow, well, I used to have another crossbow. I just bought this Raven this past summer.
Okay. Which Raven is it? Do you remember?
I don't know. It's not the real expensive one.
Right, right. I think Dad's got the R10. I think that's the one he shoots, is the R10.
Yeah.
And that dude is some kind of fast, man. Good Lord. That's a good crossbow, to be honest with you. And that's a good broadhead that you shoot. You know, I think it's a, is that the Tri-Pan for the crossbow? I can't remember, be off the top of my head. But, yeah, you've got a good setup for sure. For sure. You've taken a lot of deer with it.
I've had good luck with that broadhead.
Yeah.
Now, the crossbow, I used to hunt compound bow till about, I don't know, 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. But I shot that Rage, you know, with my compound bow too. But I just went to the crossbow. I don't know if it's any difference. I don't know what the difference is.
Right.
But it says crossbow, so I buy it.
You know, I've wondered that myself. I think the grain, no, is it 125 grain? I can't remember what. Yeah. Maybe it's the grain. I don't know what the, but they'll label them. They sell them for crossbows. So, like you said, I don't know what the difference is.
Yeah, I don't know if it's got a little bit stronger.
And it may because those crossbows.
Tab on the back, you know.
Those crossbows are bringing some heat, man. When they sling one down range, it's coming. Especially the Ravens.
Oh, yeah.
And I
don't know how they make that thing do that with a limb shaped like that.
I know. It's weird.
It's all pulleys.
Hey, and keep your keep your fingers low. Don't put your fingers up high.
Yeah. When you look in the scope, it's got your dots and it's got keep fingers away.
That's it. Hey, I'm telling you, man, I've seen on social media some of these guys get their hands up, their fingers up too high.
Sure.
Damn, man, they'll draw back a nub in a minute.
It'll cut it off.
Sure will. Well, look, Mr. Terry, I appreciate your time, man. You know, I think we got a good little podcast here.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to add to the story?
Oh, no. Everybody knows that hunting is a preparation and a lot of luck.
A lot of luck. You know, I
just,
say it all the time.
Just keep at it.
Hey,
just
I can't tell you how many deer I've scored to where the hunters just, you know, one thing they'll say is, number one is either I never knew he was there or – you know, I just happened to be at the right place at the right time. And that's all
that's
really
it.
A lot of it
that's
is.
It.
It's you got to do your preparation, you know, yep. You know, but a lot of it's luck. A lot of
and
it's
that,
just
yep. The anticipation, that's what makes it worth it.
Yeah.
The anticipation. If you was going to kill him every time you went, you'd get burned out.
It wouldn't be any fun, would it?
No.
That's right. Well, look, man, congratulations on your deer, Terry Bam
well, thank
Bam.
You.
I give everybody a nickname because we're giving that trophy belt away. So you got the nickname Bam Bam Alvis. So
yeah,
the deer good. Ended up, it's a typical 10 with one irregular point, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it scored 147 and 6/8. Is that right?
That's right.
147 and 6/8. They're extremely long tines. I believe some of the tines were bumping around 11-12 inches main beams. The longest main beam was 23 inches. The spread, like we said before, was over 18 inches. Circumference measurements were really good. The bases were over 4 all the way around. I think it went 4-4-3, maybe 2. I can't remember right off the top of my head.
Yeah.
I had good mass. Beautiful deer. Beautiful deer, man. I'm telling you. Very, very glad that a good guy like you ended up with this animal. So.
And you know that's what you hunt for. It took me a long time to get him, but I've killed some good deer, but not nothing like that. So
yeah, well, it's gonna be
hard. Just stay with it.
That's right. Well, look, man, I appreciate you taking time out to talk to me this evening. Now,
sure, I appreciate you.
All right, brother, we'll talk at you later on.
Okay.
All right. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
So that was a good podcast, man. I appreciate Mr. Terry Bam Bam Alvis for coming on and talking to us. You know, I give everybody a nickname for this Union Parish contest because we're giving away a heavyweight belt, like a wrestling belt. So everybody gets a wrestling nickname. Terry Alvis, Terry Bam Bam Alvis. Daniel Colvin is the Corny Bottom Boogeyman. I mean, we got all kind of stuff. So bring your deer. We're going to score your deer. If you make the contest, I'm going to give you a nickname, all that fun stuff. So go check out the gear, Antlers and Hicks. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, Antlers and Hicks. We got some t-shirts. We got some ball caps, stuff like that. You know, nothing major. Again, if you want to talk, man, I love talking deer hunting. Let's get on here, kill a good deer. You see somebody kill a good deer, let me know. We'll get it going on. So, again, my name is Greg Hicks. This is the Antlers and Hicks podcast. And as always, I'm going to encourage you guys to live your life past 20 yards. I'll see you next time.